Welcome to the R7 podcast, sponsored by M is Good. R7 is an innovative, God-inspiring process that explores personal and professional purpose. R7 analyzes seven strategies to transform your vision and find direction in your organizational marketing. R7 establishes clarity and guidance for the gift we call life. Welcome to the R7 podcast. What a great episode we got coming up. You know, as we talk about R7, you know, we've got the destiny, vision, strategy, brand, communication, praying about steps 1 through 5, and then step 7, take action. And today, our host, Dave Bennett, you're going to introduce our guest, here in a second. But today we're going to talk about vision and the structure of vision, the how to create a culture of vision, how many words you should use in vision. We're going to get into vision today. I am super excited about meeting another expert in this world of vision.
Heck yeah, man. Well, I'm excited today too. I'm so excited. If you're watching this, I'm wearing my brand new black R7 yes. hoodie thanks to Mr. David Aloysius Jones. Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
Well, hey, we are excited today. One of my good buddies is joining us today. His name is David Miller. And David spent, some of you may know David. He spent about a little over 9 years at Slingshot. So if you're in ministry, you know Slingshot is one of the top agencies in the country for helping to find staff for ministry. And so between doing that and then doing a lot of coaching, Dave spent, again, a little over 9 years there. And then for about 2.5, he's been chief expansion officer at Novus Global, which is a pretty kick butt organization. If you've never heard of it, I'll let Dave talk about it. But man, David Miller, welcome to the podcast, man. Welcome, it's great to have you.
Hey, it's good to be here. I just like being in a room with other Davids. It feels right. Feels like the way that I like to live my life. So this is good.
Yeah. It's absolutely perfect. It's perfect, man. So for a second here, before we get into it, talk about what you're doing at Novus, man.
Yeah, Novus Global, it's an executive coaching firm. And so we've got 42 coaches all across the world, mainly in the US and Canada. We're working with everything from Fortune 500, clients and like CEOs and really C-suite there. We're working with like international clients, as well as like professional athletes. Like you're catching me as I just got off of a meeting with LAFC, so like the LA Football Club. We were doing a training there for their team just a few days ago, and it's just been a blast, man. Like everything seems to come together really well from what I was doing at Slingshot to then coming into this space has been a blast.
Awesome. Go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, so that's awesome. What would you say is like a high and low of your day?
Yeah, I mean it's a good question because I can take it a couple of directions. And on one hand, the high and low is that I work with really incredible people, but we're all like we're remote, and so there's not like a central office that we're all officing out of. And so I get this like amazing these like shots in the arm of culture, and then I'm kind of sitting in my home office and going, oh, I wish we were still in that conversation. Or I wish I could walk down the hall and talk to somebody. And, you know, so I think that I could go that direction in like the high and low of it. Mm-hmm. If I really went into what's been going on today, I had a really powerful coaching session with the leader of their $150 million construction company in Southern California. I'm coaching their executive team. And today was a little bit of that, hey, we're veering away from the vision that we've agreed to and starting to ask some pretty tough questions that were met with a little bit of that deer in the headlights with the person that I was coaching. And we got to an incredible place, but there's like this heavy lifting that happens within that sacred space of coaching where it's like, I'm not here to tell you the answer, but I am here to hold your vision high. And you know, one of the things we'll say often is in a coaching relationship, you as the client, you are not the boss. Me as the coach, I am not the boss. Like the vision is the boss, and we serve at the pleasure. And so once we've established what that vision is, of course we can pivot, we can talk about that, but that's all negotiated. That's not assumed. And I think we got into a place where the default became, there was actually a miscommunication between their, you know, on their team. Hey, I think the vision has shifted. And so I can be I think antagonism is a really great trait of a good coach. And so in the middle of our session, I asked if I could. I texted the CEO of the company to join us on the call, so we can get clarity now, rather than waiting to see. You know, they said we'll get. I have that conversation in 2 weeks, and I was like, or we can do it now. And so he jumped on, and we did that. And so that moment, frankly, I would say was a high and a low. I mean, there's the high of the big swing, and it worked, and we had this incredible breakthrough moment, and I love that. And I think that I'm an ex-pastor, right? So I have this in the back of my mind of like, oh man, like, I had a big swing and I might've connected. And so I hope he's okay. Right. More ego than vision. So
that's beautiful, man. I'm really excited to talk to you today, because for the last 23 years, I've run M is Good. And, you know, I've been in this Christian bubble of really since 2013 of really writing a lot of different vision statements, mission statements, brand promise, core values. And so I'm really, you know, excited to bump this theory behind, off you.
Yeah.
And so in my space, you know, vision is a short, portable, easy to understand, memorable, inspiring statement. It's 7-11 words, no conjunctions.
Yeah.
You know, it's something like I kind of treat as a billboard driving by the road, and that comes out of Habakkuk 2:2, mm-hmm. where, you know, like, you know, Habakkuk's on this watchtower and, you know, he's upset with God, right? And he's sitting there, he's like, okay, God, I'm just going to sit here and wait. And God responds and says, we'll write the vision on tablet, make it plain for mm-hmm. a runner running by can see it and carry it with them.
Yeah.
And so I think about a modern day billboard. Right. You got more than 11 words on a billboard. You're not going to be able to read it as you're flying by the, you know.
That's right.
And so when you think about vision in my space, and I love your feedback, is like, it's got to be that short, portable, easy to understand, mm-hmm. something that gravitates and something that the culture of the organization can get behind, but also your clients, your donors, first time guests can get behind it as well.
For sure.
Whereas your mission is more of like the what, where, when, and how. Like, mm-hmm. you know, you have more time to kind of talk about it, versus vision's got to be change yes we can or make America great again.
Sure.
You know, what are your thoughts about that? That was a lot. What do you think?
Yeah. I mean, I think like so many phrases that are out there, it has multiple definitions. And so it does depend on the way you're going to use it. And so I've been in so many really powerful, you know, branding or mission, vision, values exercises, whether it's with churches or, you know, at Novus Global, we have our vision, our mission statement, our vision. And we walked through that with an agency, right? Or we walked through that with someone that really facilitated that. And they'd have the same. Here are the rules of, you know, it's a game. What you've done is you've established the rules of a game someone gets to play mm-hmm. in order to move closer and closer to clarity. And that's wonderful. And then, right, in your world, I like the way you're wording that. In your world, then it's the leadership, you know, you and your team leave, and the leadership of that organization now has to carry that billboard or banner and really lean in. So at Novus Global, I mean, we do our global meetings. So every Wednesday, everyone from all over the world gets on a Zoom call. In the beginning of it, we go through our vision. Hey, this is the vision around here. And we are constantly talking about it. And so everyone can recite it. But gosh, the amount of organizations, companies I've worked on and or now in this capacity worked with that have no idea what the vision statement is, right? It's a thing that they remember working on 2 years ago when they were at that offsite, and now this, right? So I like that as the exercise. And then the follow-up is what makes it powerful, which is like, now will you actually say it? Will you actually use those words that we crafted? Or was that like a cool exercise that, you know, we got to kumbaya around the fire together? And so that's the first piece there. Moving into the way that a coach often will use a vision. Now, I have heard coaches that will use, you know, hey, here are the parameters. So like I have a friend who he'll say, what are your two words? He'll actually boil the whole thing down to two words. Your vision is these two words are going to describe you. And so there's so many ways, and it's whatever makes it the most sticky is what I'm into. But for us, our definition, and I'll say it out here, you know, is we believe that having a clear picture of the future ignites passion in us and others. Mm. And so it really is. I don't have a here's how long it needs to be. I'm gauging for, does this light you up? So sometimes people come into a session or come into the beginning of a coaching experience with us, and you know, it's, they're like, yeah, my vision is to grow by 10%, and then I want to do this, and we'll go, all right, man, yeah, cool. Tell your face, you know what I mean, like that you're excited about it. Like, I don't understand. Like, that's not you don't seem interested at all in what you just said.
Right.
You know, that doesn't seem to ignite passion. So as a coach, I'm consistently trying to move people toward, hey, is this going to draw something out of you that wouldn't in just the normal everyday function of what you do? And once we get there, it's pretty clear when you get there in the coaching setting. Once you get there, now all of a sudden we're going from, okay, here's the vision, here's reality. Everything we're coaching in is the gap.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to be very clear in where things are now, and very clear in where we're headed. And if those two things are clear in the beginning of a coaching relationship, everything else is, you know, we're looking at, again, this like strategy mindset that could be getting in your way. Where is the person you are now getting in the way of where you're going? That's where we want to live.
I want to go back to something you said, because I was actually laughing to myself there, and you guys couldn't tell, but my eyes just kind of watered a little bit. I was almost like emotional tears, because early on when I discovered the portability of vision, I was in this happened to me for about a year. I was just really immature about it, but I was in with a bunch of pastors on three or four different occasions, and I had asked them what their vision was.
Yeah.
And they were like, hey, they're pointing to their administrative assistant. Can you go get that brochure?
Get the document.
Go get the document and the bro. And I just came out with it. I was like, sorry, pastor, but that's not vision. You don't have any vision.
Right.
And that was like the wrong thing to say. That's why I was like, the meeting was over at that point.
Did you get fired?
They're like, what do you mean you don't have vision? You don't tell a pastor he doesn't have vision. You know.
And here's what's fun. I would call it, you're exploding dynamite. Now there's a time for it, right? But I, like, in my mind, that's where the meeting begins, right? It's like the moment that we find that thing that you think is true, but when I like dig into it a little bit, we start to realize, actually, maybe you've bought your own hype for a little while. So I remember being this happened a couple months ago. We were with an international brand, that, you know, huge golf brand. And I'm meeting with the president of the organization, and he's interested in getting coached. But he's interested in getting everyone else on his team coach. Like, how often is this, right? Like, he wants everyone else to learn things, but maybe not necessarily him. And partway through, he's talking, and I'm searching for the moment to kind of lean in on him a little bit, because I don't think people do that with the lead pastor or with the president of an international golf brand. And so I remember him saying something, and I said, that what you just said leads me to ask this question. Is it possible that you are not as inspiring as you think you are as a leader? Because if you were, the things that you're describing as problems wouldn't be the problem that you're trying to solve. And I watched him, and good leaders can do this. He sat back in that posture of, the first thing I think happens, right? You can see it on their face, is people don't talk to me that way.
Mm.
And then he's thinking to him, and that's like a little bit frustrated. And then he leans in and he goes, oh my gosh, people don't talk to me that way. Can we work together?
Oh, nice. Yeah.
And that to me, so like if that were, you know, if I were in your situation and they go, oh, that's the end of the meeting, I would go, ooh, dodged a bullet. That's amazing. I'm so glad that we're not going to work together, because this would be a very uncomfortable experience. But if that leader, and if they're listening, or in someone is willing to say the thing that that does kind of stop you in your tracks for a minute, that might be the perfect partner for you to lean in with, because that, all of a sudden it's like, oh my gosh, like where else will I find someone that would say something so bold that is for my benefit? Like you want him to have a strong and clear vision, and it is for his benefit to hear that and to go, thank you for saying that.
That's great. Let me ask you this. So I say this often, there's three problems with vision. One, you don't have it. Two, you don't believe it. And three, you're not communicating it.
Yeah.
So what do you think about that? When, you know, in your relationships, you're yep. dealing with much larger organizations in your, you know, I don't know, your day to day or week to week, like you're thinking yep. like how many of the, in those three criteria, they don't know what it is. They don't believe it. And they're not communicating. Does it happen often?
Yeah. Well, let me ask you a question. Are you okay if I play with it for a minute?
Yeah, go for it.
Can I push in on that? Yeah. So number two and number three, I resonate with highly. Like I would go, yeah. And you just worded number one a little bit differently, which I think I might resonate more with. The idea when you first said it was you don't have it. And I would push on that. And I would say, again, maybe you don't have it articulated, but the idea that you don't have, I think everyone has vision. There is no person that I've ever met that doesn't have a vision. And here's how you know, because every person has something they're complaining about. Everyone. And in the coaching space, we would go, your complaints are a latent vision. So if you're complaining about something in your marriage, if you're complaining about something, the way your boss treats you or the way that you wish that how many more customers you wish you had, you're complaining about something going on with your church and what's going on in your congregation. That's you have the inverse of that is at least the beginning phases of your vision. And someone can help mine that out with you where that complaint is actually, again, it's the beginning. So the concept that they don't have it, I don't know that I would take hold of. But the idea that they don't know it, I fully agree with that, right? So that they don't know what the vision is, they wouldn't be able to articulate it because they're living in the lands of complaint. So they're living in what, again, in my world, I would call anti-vision because they're just complaining about the way they wish the world would be. And if someone really took the time, they would be able to like push that forward and go, oh, that is really giving me hints about the way I want the world to be, my vision for the way the world will be. And then they get to decide if they want to do anything about that.
So you don't have, what I'm hearing you say is you don't have vision yet. It's in there, but it's not being communicated.
Yeah, you could be unaware of, you do have it, but you are unaware of what, like how to articulate it.
And is there a theology? Is that kind of statement have a theology foundation? That we were made in Christ's image and that there is a vision for your life?
That's interesting. I don't know that that we've like intentionally attached it to a theology. We've attached it more to the psychology or what it would be like an ontological approach to coaching, like believing that the person that you're talking to has the answer in them. Mm-hmm. And so I start a conversation with you. You already know. You know where you're headed. You know what the dream is. You're afraid of the dream. That's one. So you're afraid of it. And so if you articulate it, you would go, ooh, does that mean I have to do it? I don't actually want to do it. Right. You know what I mean? Like, and so there's one piece there. So someone will say, I don't know what I want. And I get to, you have a little bit of a BS meter for that, right? You kind of go, you do. You might just not want to do what it would take to change things. That's different than not having vision. And so the concept of blissful ignorance, I think, is real. People like living in the blissful ignorance of I couldn't do something about it if I wanted to. And again, I think a good leader is going to look at that and go, I don't think you started your company with the thought process of I couldn't do something about this. Like the people that are really out there changing the world, and yep. making waves are looking at it going, oh, I've noticed a problem. I have a complaint. I believe I have these skills that would help to serve and move this complaint forward. And that's how we're going to engage with our visions.
And then you said two and three, you resonate more with, can you talk about that a little more?
Yeah. Well, you just, I mean, now that I've gone off on my soapbox, so can you remind me two and
one
three?
You don't have it yet, right?
Yeah, sure.
Two, you don't believe it.
Yep.
Three, you're not communicating it.
Yeah. And so, you don't believe it. I wonder, is that in reference to like not believing you're capable of it? Like, what does it mean that they don't believe it?
So, yeah, they don't have the resources. It's almost like faith, right? They don't have the resources. They're stepping out. It really hasn't sunk into their spirit just yet. Are people really going to follow me? I don't know.
Doubt. They're not manifesting it. They're not really believing.
Yeah, they're not living it. Like.
Yeah, you know. So I like that. I like the idea. So I don't believe it. Meaning, I'm not confident that it's actually true of me.
Right.
My vision is to, you know, so we go, our vision is leading humanity in high performance, in meta performance. So like the vision for our deal is like we are here to lead humanity into meta performance. And yeah. so that's amazing, right? Like I love that. There are days that I'll wake up and I'll go, humanity, we're going to lead humanity into this, like, oh, okay. Yeah. Right. Like yeah. There are days that feels yeah. daunting, but then I get to anchor into whether or not I'm willing to carry that. Yeah. You know, right. And so that I like the distinction.
You know, you can go back to some account. Of the most historic visions of all time. You know, like Bill Gates' original vision was a computer in every home. Back then, the computer was the size of a house.
Yeah, that was asinine. Like that was,
insane to think that.
People rolled their eyes at him, right? And it was just this whole idea of like, what, you know, shut up, you know, right? Like they're not gonna do that. And yeah. then little by little, right? Like little by little, he's like, and I think that, like, again, world changing leaders have this like, I'll show you.
Yeah.
Right. Like, when you look at the idea, I think it was Steve Jobs and this whole, like the line, one of the lines that he gave, whatever you think about Steve Jobs in general, this one line has stuck with me. No one was asking for the iPhone until I showed it to them.
Mm. Yep.
And to me, it's like so often in leaders, we're leading by consensus and therefore we're tamping down the vision into what the group believes is possible. And so we're going, hey, let's get as many people in the room together and let's all agree that this is possible for us. And I think Steve Jobs went in and said, I could care less what you think is possible. This is what I'm going to do. And people go, well, no one wants that. Uh-huh. I know. Right. Like, okay. But here's where we're going. And there's something about that that is magnetic, that draws people in with you, to have that ostentatious, you know, ridiculous goal or vision is an invitation. Right. And so you look at the definition that we give, that it's like an invitation into being inspired. It ignites passion.
Yep.
And if you have a vision, if you can articulate a vision and at the end of that articulation, people go, that's cool. It's not it in my experience. It really is an opportunity to go, oh, what you just said makes me think about all of these other possibilities. What you just said, and again, even if it's, you know, this is when we're working with a team, if it does that for you, anyone that's like, that's sitting there going, what would the vision be that inspires me as an individual? That's the thing that's worth running after. And it's worth losing sleep over. It's worth working hard. It's worth failing. It's worth like all of that is worth it. And so if I were to share a recent story, I'm working with like the head of sales for a water treatment plant, or company. And he was just having a hard, he's like, I'm already the best sales guy here. Like, no one's beating me. Like, I don't understand why am I trying to coach and do more? And it was like, okay, that's cool. Like, you know, that's a high performer mentality. And most people are looking to become a high performer. I want to be the best.
Yep.
I'm asking you if there's anything beyond, if you have anything left in the tank. So you're already the best. Are you done? Is there no level to the video game that you have left that you want to play? You have nothing left in you. This is the top of your performance is right now as the best. And he's like, no one ever says no, by the way. You know, I'm sorry. No one ever says yes. I've never coached someone and they go, actually, yeah, this is it. Right. Like that's stupid. Right. We're coaching professional athletes that just won, like that won the divisions and did the things. And then we ask them that question. They go, oh yeah, man, I got a lot more in the tank. We go, right. Everyone does.
Exactly.
Yeah, so go ahead, Dave. Sorry.
I was going to say, and it's funny because you've just got to find a way to make it compelling, right? Even if you're going to go be innovative, you're going to do whatever. I mean, about, I don't know, 5 years ago, I started leading a, you know, smaller group of people in the company I was in. And the vision that I'd created for that group was helping everyone win every day. And that sounds cute. Sounds like, you know, the vision of a kindergarten class. But dude, you know how hard it is to do that?
And it's talking about, you know, how do you help your customers win every day? How do you help your vendors win every day? How do you help each other win every day? You know what I mean? And how do you know, you're trying to figure out how to do all of this. And so, a lot of times trying to help one is creating competing pressure against the other, and you're not going to help them if you help one. So then it's like, well, dang, all right, now I really got to think about this. How do I create a win for all these different entities, whether it's external customer or vendor, internal employee? How do I do that? And man, they grabbed onto that sucker with both hands, and that was the rally cry.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And I'm saying, so, and so if you and I were working together on that, first of all, I love that because I love we language. When I'm working with a team, it's like, this is not an individual game, right? So we go together or we don't. And so everyone wins. We get to then say though, so like, we could create a game where we winning is defined. Yep. And there isn't internal competition between the customer, the client, the rest of the team. Like there isn't that because we've decided ahead of time what we means. And so, or what everyone means. And so if we come together, right. And we go, like I've been working with our team and we go, hey, if you have a thriving coaching practice, but we have three coaches that are struggling, we're not winning.
Yep.
That like we're not in that game. We're choosing to be a team. And so if you want that game, go be an independent contractor coach and go do your own thing. That's great. I love those. That there's plenty out there for that. Yep. If you want to be a part of an organization that's trying to do something a little bit bigger and more intentional, we don't get to just go, well, I'm good. So I'm, you know, so like wipe my hands of it. I did my part. It is about the whole. And to me, that's where we get into some really compelling, you know, it's the next level. So for the person that's already killing it. So if I go back to our head of sales at the water treatment company, we got to a place that we said, great. Well, what's the real, then what are we aiming for? And he says, I want to buy a lake house so that my daughter can come home from college and we can meet at the lake house. Great. When's your daughter go to college? 2 years. All right, man, we got a very clear goal. That's an amazing and compelling vision that we can get behind. And so we are no longer, you know, rating your success based on how you did last year, last quarter, or anything else. We're rating your success on a brand new scale headed toward a lake house. And in order to do that, you cannot do what you've always been doing and get that new result. So we're going to have to go try some things. Are you willing to do it? He goes, sure. And we just ended with him having the best quarter he's ever had. And normally Q1's the worst quarter of the year for them. And so to me, that's the, when you play a different game, you get different results. You play the same game, you get the same results. So the vision dictates the rules of the game.
I love that story. And I want to go back to what you said earlier, which I think is just brilliant. There's rules to the clarity. Like, I love that.
Yeah.
Like definitive rules, something you can get behind. It's not something, you know, in the sky that just like, you know, somebody can't get your mind wrapped around.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. Let me ask you this, because you're probably one person that I can ask this to. Okay. And you have a really good answer for me. A true leader, a visionary, is lonely.
Mm.
And in your executive coaching, how do you navigate that loneliness while yet still pushing on the vision?
Hmm. Yeah. When you, so sometimes when I'm in an interview, I find myself fighting, wanting to ask coaching questions back. So I'll tell you what I want to ask, and then you can tell me if you want to go there.
Sure.
I'm curious how we would define the, like, what makes a leader lonely? So we're working with the presupposition, right? That like a leadership is lonely. I believe I agree with that. I've seen it. I've experienced it. And I'm curious from your experience as a leader, what makes a leader lonely, or what leads to that end goal or end?
Yeah. Conclusion? Well, I mean, we can use the example you used earlier with Steve Jobs. Mm-hmm. You didn't know you need the iPhone until I showed you it. That space is very lonely. It is very entrepreneurial. It is, you know, I can just only imagine the team around them going, I don't know what we're doing. Yeah. Are you sure you want to dump $10 million into this?
Got it. Yes.
You know, and you go, yes, I'm sure. Let, you know, like in that, I don't know. I never met him, obviously, but I can probably, you know, he's probably have some narcissistic tendencies saying, listen, sure, if you're not going to do it, I'll find somebody that will.
Yeah.
you know, like this is where we're going. And in that space, it's lonely.
Yeah. And so so on the different levels of lonely in this, like level one is what I'm hearing is, it's lonely because I have a clear picture of where we're headed and I'm not totally sure how to communicate that or how to get everyone else on board with that. Mm-hmm. And so I think for sure, like on, you know, one, yes, it's absolutely lonely there because what happens is, it's really difficult to share the burden, right? If it fails, it's because of your thing. And so it can be lonely in like I like to have people with me. You guys want to host the podcast together, right? Because, you know, it's like, oh, well, who's going to find the guest this week and who's going to do this and who's going to take on this part and who's going to, it's a shared load that you get to have together in that space. I love that too. I like doing things with people, but if you have people that haven't caught on to the vision and your vision's so far out there, then I think it definitely would be lonely there. I think leadership can also be lonely because, and we talk a lot about this within like a lot of modern psychology and like workplace is, there's a power, inequality. And so if I am my best friend's boss, that can be really lonely. Right. And so I've had plenty of, I love doing things with my friends, but I'm normally one of the leaders in the group. And so I've had plenty, even at, you know, through my time at Novus that they're on the team, but they have a complaint about our culture. Or they have a complaint about something that they wish was another way. And as a leader, I get to decide, are we friends and we just have room for us to complain to each other? Or are you expecting me to do something about it as your leader, as your supervisor, as the one who has the vision? And it can feel very lonely where, who can I talk to when I have a complaint? Right? Like who are the people that I get to kind of bring into this space? And so I hear a lot around with kind of the complaint with leaders often is that people just don't understand. They don't understand the day to day of what I'm doing and the weight that I'm carrying. And my friends and my employees become my critics instead of becoming my co-laborers. Mm-hmm. And I think that is incredibly lonely. Like, absolutely.
The reason I was asking that question, because this happened back in 2013, 15, where I was really just pushing on vision and getting around some very strong Christian entrepreneurs. And I found myself getting in trouble, you know, not with the law, but like with anxiety, with doubt, with severe stress. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know how to handle it. And that's when I went back to school, you know, and I started understanding psychology and, you know, like just really getting into how do I, you know, navigate this anxiety.
Yeah.
And this depression and these sort of these narcissistic traits or these peaks and these valleys and how do we navigate the valley, you know, and still maintain the vision and push through and quite honestly, not be an a-hole, you know what I mean? And still get people to do, you know, what you need to get done,
right. But
creating a culture of, hey, we're doing this together. I can sort of see a glimpse and I like this guy or gal and I want to push forward. So I was just kind of curious how you're navigating that and still maintaining culture, because I'm guessing your numbers are way bigger than, you know, what I've ever dealt with, you know? So,
yeah, I mean, what I'm learning as a leader, I feel like I'm learning how to experience complaints differently to where it doesn't feel like an attack on the vision. It feels like an invitation for clarity.
Okay. That's beautiful. Yeah.
And that still maybe doesn't answer the question of who are your friends or what's your community. There are other ways to lean into that as well. But in what is essentially a community of workers, a job where we're doing a job together, you know, it's like, it makes sense that I feel lonely when I can fire my friend, right? You know, so like and so there's something there to just maybe in another conversation to unpack, but what used to really almost it hurt my feelings when one of our team would complain about something that, or, you know, talk about what they wish was different in the way that we you know, the way I led, the way what our vision is, where we're headed, what we're doing. I used to take it very personally, probably not in the last 5 years or more now, but I used to in the past take it very personally when someone would leave our company and either go start their own or go join another. At my time at Slingshot, I remember talking to pastors about like they would feel betrayed that their youth pastor went to another job. How could they, you know, how could they do this to me? Right. And there is this, when, you know, we take it so personally and in some ways it makes sense to take it personally because we've chosen to sacrifice so much for that vision. At the same time, when you can start to listen to people and say, oh, that like this is, it's almost like moving into relational dynamics. Like this person has, you know, my significant other wishes that I would do the dishes. Okay. Like, let's talk about that. We get to decide how we want to approach this together. You know, I get to decide how I hear that. Do I hear that? And am I of a defensive? Do I hear that? And I'm going to prove to that person that I am awesome at doing the dishes and how dare they have a criticism for me? Or am I going to hear that and go, wow, I'm hearing that you wish that I did the dishes more. Two things internally for me, I'm going, one, I want to communicate more clearly when I do the dishes, right? Because maybe they just don't know. Then I want to be really intentional that their complaint is there, we have a feedback process in our coaching work. And at the end of it, we go, could this be 1% true? And so rather than me getting that feedback, I wish you did the dishes more, rather than me going, I'll show you, right? I get to lean into it and go, man, maybe I think I'm doing the dishes more than I am. I wonder if I could explore that. Maybe I think I'm a better leader than I am. Maybe I can explore that. Maybe I do talk down to people. And when I think I'm being kind, they hear me as antagonistic. Maybe, I'm not as clear or I'm not as inspiring in that original story as I think I am. I wonder if I'm, you know, if I was willing to explore that and if that wasn't offensive to me, but I treated it like a piece of data. Like if you had, you know, lettuce in your teeth right now, you would want me to tell you. Mm-hmm. And so if I got feedback, I get to sit there and go, I wonder how much of this I believe is true. And am I willing to look at myself in the mirror to explore it? Or am I going to go defensive first? And I think that, at least in my experience, I've become far less lonely. Still, it still is lonely because there's a weight that I'm carrying that others are not carrying in our firm. But I feel far less attacked when someone has a, hey, I'd love it if we fill in the blank, or I wish you would fill in the blank, or I hate it when you fill in the blank, or whatever that is that complaint goes, I'm able to look at that and go, oh my gosh, this person cares about this thing that I care about so much. They're willing to have a hard conversation with me. I love that. This person wants me to be such a good leader that they're willing to have a really uncomfortable conversation about it. Okay. Like, I wonder if any of what they said is true. And if I could respond to it in a way that, you know, is there now. And then I could say no, right? Or, you know, it could be like, nope, not true. or whatever it is. And there can still be conflict, or there can still be misunderstanding, or there can still be disagreement. It's not that this like it's a zero sum game, but I have found that my leadership has become far less lonely as I intentionally invite the people into my vision. I'm not hiding my vision from them. I'm intentionally inviting them in. I want them to be a part of it. Would you co-conspire with me to make this happen? And then as they have things, I'm not defensive against it on my best days. Some days I am, but I'm not intentionally defensive. I now get to embrace the hard conversation and edge toward reconciliation and relationship.
The whole thing feels like we're tap dancing a little bit on Ted Lasso psychology. Right? It does. It feels like, again, you know, the antidote, as it talks about, and you're right in the show, the antidote of judgment is curiosity.
For sure.
And it could be judgment of the people that are complaining. It could be judgment of the people that don't understand. And in some ways, I think you're talking about, it could be judgment of myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I think most of the time when I feel defensive, it's because I think I got caught. Yeah, I mean, not always, but there are times that someone goes, you're this way, and I'll go, oh, they found out. Okay, well, I thought I was hiding that better, right?
And well, and then the worst thing you do is you go talk to your three or four really good friends that would be like, oh, you're not that way, yeah. No way.
Yeah, you go to the cheering section. We like to call it the echo chamber. You probably have something, you know, right? It's like in marketing, I remember talking to You know, someone who was helping us with marketing once, and they're just like, yeah, you're talking to the same few thousand people, and you're, and of course you're getting, they're all saying they love it. Like, you know, that, that's your original audience. Like, let's go figure out what the next audience is and see if they love it. Right. And so, you know, there is like a, you know, confirmation bias to that of going, well, the people that I want to talk to me, I tend to surround. It happens in churches often, right? We, you know, like the elders are the lead pastor's best friend. Well, maybe that makes the elders' meetings more enjoyable and probably not getting the truth all the time. And so there's, there can be both and to, you know, the power of it. That pastor's probably less lonely. And maybe not seeing all of the things that they're capable of the way that they could.
Yeah.
Let's switch gears here and let's talk about meta performance.
Yeah.
Talk to us about what that is. What does it mean to you? Mm-hmm. And did you have the name first before Meta?
Yeah, Zuckerberg, come on. yeah, no, we did. So the idea of it's not meta as in like, again, the, you know, the deal, it's metamorphosis. And the concept is, I guess I'll start with a story. So we were at the time, this is about 10 years ago, we were consulting with really one of the companies, right? You know, if I said the name and it's all NDA'd, so I won't, but you go, oh, I use that every day. And we go in and we say, okay, great. What's the problem? Why are we here? What's the problem? And they go, well, we are a bunch of high performers. And, you know, our team looks back at them and goes, uh-huh. So what's the problem? Because isn't everyone trying to be a high performer? And they go, well, they start laying out a high performer. There are some problems with high performance. The high performer is used to winning. So they don't put themselves in a position to lose very often or to learn, be new at the thing, because they're used to being the best, and that is kind of a drug. We get it in us. We want to stay on that high. You know, a high performer isn't, you know, is like defensive. The moment that, you know, we talked about like feedback and we talked about feeling lonely, a high performer, if someone comes in and goes, well, you should, you go, do you know who you're talking to? Do you know how many people attend my church? Do you know how fast I run? Do you know, right? Like, you know, how many customers we have? Like, what? How could you say that? I'm already the best. And so we started asking this, you know, really a series of questions, but the idea of meta performance is a core question, and it's what is after high performance? What comes after high performance? What comes after arrived? And so it's not meta as, again, as in the,
right,
the company, but it's metamorphosis. It's ever changing. It's a summitless peak that we get to constantly look and say, hey, I'm here now. What's over there? And we're constantly moving into the next iteration of who we are and the next gear. We'll use gear, more weight on the bar, level of the video game, right? As like concepts. And this is one of those games that never ends. It's life. Or when it ends, it's over. And so at every level, you get to decide now to, do I coast here now? Am I just always this guy from this point forward, or do I have more in me? And so meta performance is the intentional act of chasing the next level.
And do you feel like there's inspiration, but yet humility in that definition and working in that environment?
Yeah. Well, I think that there's an invitation for both, for sure.
Okay.
And so because the invitation, you know, right, is to go in. And so, you know, look inward. And again, we switch the question a little bit. You know, most coaches or leadership consultants or people that are out there are going to say, what do you want? Right. So they're coming in, they're going, what do you want? We're going to help you get what you want. What I'm doing when I come in, my team, we're coming in and we're going, what are you capable of? It's a very different question.
Mm-hmm.
Because what you want might be comfort. What you want might not be good for you. What you want might fill in the blank. What are you capable of invites us into a brand new story. And we have this fundamental leadership concept that we believe in, that we say every leader is woefully underestimating what they're capable of. Every leader. Whatever you're doing right now, you're woefully underestimating what you're capable of. In the same way, we believe that every team is woefully underestimating what they're capable of together. And so that's where, like, I think there's inspiration to that. The humility comes when people start realizing I can't do it alone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The humility comes when people start saying, I'm willing to play a different game that I'm not already great at. I'm willing to make a fool of myself in order to get different results and to move into this next layer of the game. And so one of even my own personal transitions And there's so much story behind it. I was at Slingshot Group for almost 10 years. I love that team. Mentors. I mean, Stan Endicott is a mentor of mine. We talked just yesterday. And as he was retiring, as like leadership was retiring, there were questions of like, so what's next here? What are we going to do? And I remember thinking to myself, on one hand, this has been a really fun ride and I could do this until I retire. And it would go great. I would make decent money. I have a great reputation. I would never want for clients. I could just coast from here and we'd do great. Or I can go to this industry that I have no business being in, right? Like, we're coaching mayors of cities. We're coaching, again, professional athletes. Now, you don't see my entire frame here, but I am not an athlete. And so, right. And so, but I was just with LAFC, right? Like, sitting with that team and walking them through these concepts. And so the thought process of going into spaces that I am new, going into spaces where they have no idea who I am. They didn't read my book. They didn't listen to my talk. I didn't place people there. I haven't worked with them for years. I'm just going to go in there and I get to kind of make a fool of myself. I went back to my own school. I had helped write some like coaching curriculums at Slingshot Group. I came in and learned how to do the Novus Global style of coaching. I, as an executive in the company, became a student of our style of coaching. That was painful.
Is this part of like, you know, your future of what you're looking to do? Like when you think about a clear picture of what you could become, is that part of that passion that you have that you felt like, you know, you just weren't tapping into?
Yeah. In a lot of ways, there was a piece of me that said, that was like, I wonder what would happen if I were to venture out on my own, you know, or with a new team, right? I wonder what would happen if I took some of what I've been learning through, you know, 13 years of pastoral leadership and 9 years, helping to coach and train and place leaders in the nonprofit Christian world. Could I distill that into something that is impact in a Fortune 500 company with the president of a $500 million construction company? Could I be a part of that conversation? Do I have that gear in me? Hmm. And slowly started realizing, oh, wow, that's working. And so now I'm even looking like with our own coaches, like I'm constantly like, okay, what's the vision for this year? I have my financial vision. I have ideal clients that I have no idea how I would ever get access to, right? But I'm looking at it going, oh my gosh, if I were to close my eyes and wake up in the morning and I were coaching the person that I wanted to coach, this would be so inspiring to me. Like this would ignite passion in me in a brand new way. That's really, really fun to think about. So yeah, it absolutely has been my personal journey of chasing that.
I appreciate you taking us there. Let me go ahead, Dave.
Hold on. We need to ask this question because if I was listening to this in my car, I'd be like, time out, Miller. I just want to go there real quick. Top three dream people you could coach.
So I'm going to give you an unsatisfying and satisfying answer. Okay. I want to coach cultural influencers. And so not influencers necessarily, like not like social media influence, like, but like someone that if they understood it, it would change and revolutionize the worlds of many, right? So one of the people that, like, if I were to put a name is right now is Ryan Reynolds. I would love to coach Ryan Reynolds. Now, not because he's an awesome actor and his dreamy eyes, those are true, but I really, when I think of Ryan Reynolds, I think of his soccer team. I think of his whiskey company. I think of Boost Mobile. I think of the lives of all of those companies and the way that if he understood meta performance, and if he lived it in such a way that then permeated all of those different spaces, that people would pay their mortgages, people would get raises, more people would get jobs, people would love the environment that they were in, right? So, like by influencing this one person, it has this ripple effect into so many different spaces. So that's like one of the first people that comes to mind for me. I love the idea of coaching individuals that own multiple companies. Mm-hmm. And because again, I just think that it's a drop that then will permeate.
Sure. That's awesome. Yeah. That's awesome. All right. All right, Jones, we got to find Ryan Reynolds for our boy here.
Yeah. That'd be cool. So if I just want to kind of bring it back to our audience a little bit here, you know, if you're a, you know, a husband wife duo, you got a vision from the Lord, whether it was last year, this year, or maybe last night, and you're getting ready to start your ministry, you know, and we've been very adamant on this podcast about, you know, starting with the destiny, which is, you know, is to glorify the Lord with your talents and your abilities. That is where we're at. You know, that is our destiny. And then what does the vision of that look like? You know, where do we begin? We begin with vision. And so you, David Miller, being an expert in this area, working with very large companies and entrepreneurs, successful organizations, what would you say to that ministry couple? Maybe it's not a couple, maybe it's a single guy or single gal, and say, you know what, I want to start this because I feel this passion in my heart and I want to go for it, but I got a whole lot of vision and I don't have a whole lot of money. Where do I begin?
Yeah. I think the first thing is, write it down and make sure that it really, you can articulate the vision. Mm-hmm. So again, whether that's for marketing, whether that's for, you know, to be able to share with others, but that it is something that you can look at on a regular basis that is very clear to you what that vision is. I think that's one of the places to start. That it, humanity drifts to comfort. And so you will drift into just doing what you would do without the vision if you let it. Then I think it's surround yourself with people who won't let you. So if that's friends, if that's family, like people that, you know, again, you think of, you know, all throughout scripture, you know, it's like, I need someone to come up. I'm Moses. I need you to come up and hold my arms up, right? Like there is something about, you know, being surrounded by people that, that get the vision at least enough to walk with you and to say it's worth something in that space. I think that matters quite a bit. And so even though we use the example of Steve Jobs, or of Microsoft or whatever those, that is, there were people that were funding it. There were people that were, I mean, if only for the mad genius of it all, people wanted to be in the room, whether they actually understood what was happening or not. And so there is something about surrounding yourself with people that you want to lean into. And then again, for me, it is keep coming back to it over and over and over and over again. Be clear. This, you know, I mentioned earlier, be clear what the gap is between the vision and reality. I think oftentimes people have a vision and they will shy away from reality because they think that reality will take away from my vision. And I just think reality gives you a starting point as you are moving toward a North Star. So those two things are so important to go in conjunction with each other. And the moment that you get like bogged down by the, but I can't, or I won't, or I'm not sure, or all of those different pieces, you get to relook at the vision and relook at the reality that you have and how you're going to move forward.
That is powerful, powerful stuff there. Thank you so much for that. That's good stuff. Hmm. Dave, I'll give you the final word.
Man. There's a lot that went on today. There's no doubt about it. I think at the end of the day, you know, one of the biggest things to take away from here is clarity and commitment. I mean, you've got to get clear about what your vision is, about where you're going, and you have to commit to what that is. Don't just dabble in it. Don't put your toe in it. You got to go all in. And even if, and I love what you said, Miller, even if you feel you're at the top of your game, are you done? Is that it? You're good? Or is there a lot more that's out there? So I just want to encourage everybody, no matter where you are in that spectrum, there's more. And having a clear vision helps you do that.
That's good.
Awesome. All right. Thanks again, Dave, for being on the podcast. This was super powerful. I'm going to go back and watch this for sure. So for those of you out there, we will see you next week. Thanks again for joining us. I want to give special thanks to our sponsor, M is Good. Want to learn more about M is Good? Go to misgood.com. Join us again next week as we continue to uncover the secrets to success with faith-based testimonies and the power of R7. Remember, destiny awaits, but time does not.